Hello, you're listening to Career Conversations, a new regular series that's part of the Table Talk podcast from Food Matters Live. I'm Alicia Roche, a chef and food journalist. Together, we'll meet experts in cooking, mixology, the environment, psychology, branding, social media, and all sorts as we learn about the surprisingly varied roles that go way beyond the kitchen. My guest today is Instagram sensation and infographic king, the fitness chef, whose real name is Graham Tomlinson. This lovely chap has amassed over a million followers with his no-nonsense approach to cutting through diet myths and health fads. His third book is out now, optimistically titled Lose Weight Without Losing Your Mind. We've all been there. I'll be back at the end with some key info and useful resources about how to turn social media into a serious business. But for now, settle in and enjoy the podcast. Don't hate me, Graham. I've got an oat latte on the go. Do you get fed up with people always drinking so-called healthy things?
No, not at all. Obviously, oat milk is plant-based, so some people kind of have to do that if they have a dairy intolerance or vegan. I've actually had oat milk lattes before, and to be honest, I think I prefer them, just from a taste point of view.
How did you first hit upon the formula that you now have on Instagram with the infographics, the nice simplicity of it all? How did that come about?
So other people were actually doing it before me. To be honest, probably got inspired by not necessarily the individuals, but just the style that they were doing it in. Because, you know, instead of having a picture, which is, it's so difficult on Instagram to write a caption that is linked to the image. And quite often you see people just posting a picture of themselves and then the caption will be about something completely different to them sitting next to a river or whatever it is. So putting the actual information in a graphic form, A, it grabs their attention. So it's almost like a form of clickbait, but in a good way, because you're reeling people in to have a look at the image. And then if they want to read on further in the caption, they can.
So was there a lot of planning behind it? Did you start thinking, right, I'm going to, almost like a five-year plan, this is what I'm going to do with my feed?
Not necessarily, although quite quickly it was evident that it was really effective and I was gaining quite a lot of followers from it. So it was obvious that I was going to really persevere with it. Initially, I think the first ever graphic I put up was comparing a whole pineapple with chopped pineapple and comparing the cost and just telling people, look, it's a quarter of the cost if you buy the whole pineapple and chop it yourself. And people were just like, oh, really helpful and all this, such simple stuff. And obviously it's elevated far and beyond that, trying to tackle a lot of different myths, even some really simple things like calorie or protein values of a selection of different foods has been really popular over the years. And some other posts as well, where I'm kind of challenging certain messages and certain people in the industry as well. I think if you go back 3 years, the posts are really quite basic. And then as it goes on, it gets a little bit more informative, I would say.
So were you surprised when it started to take off in such a huge way? Was there a turning point where the feed went from a nice organic feed with devoted followers to this social media superstardom that really you are at now?
So it's been nearly 4 years since it kind of started to kick off. I think I'd built 30,000 followers in a few years of just posting stuff that wasn't really very useful to people. But fortunately, back then, the Instagram algorithm, it was easy to grow. Yeah, to be honest, it's been a lot of hard work. And it definitely didn't happen overnight. I think I'd done 2000 Instagram posts before, and I've only done 2800 and something now.
Wow.
So really, in 800 posts, I've actually built well over a million followers.
What happens when you reach that milestone? Do you get a prize?
No, on YouTube, I think you get, when you get a million subscribers, you get like a plaque or something, or like a trophy. But on Instagram, they give you nothing. YouTube, you get paid, you know, if you get lots of views and stuff. You can actually make a living out of it. On Instagram, you get nothing. Obviously, the platform is great because, you know, if you build a large enough following, you can then start selling to your audience. And in my case, I've been approached multiple times by brands to do sponsored posts and things, and I've never done them because it kind of questions the integrity of my message. The products that I've been offered to do it with have just been like, well, no. And there's only twice that I've ever done it, and that was with Spar supermarket and Gymshark. The great thing about that one was I said well, hang on a minute, I'm not really your typical type of model to be wearing your clothing and posting. Have you seen my Instagram feed? You know? And they were like, no, no worries. We just want you to do one of your graphics. But it was all about habit change last January. And they just said, do one of the graphics that you normally do. And we just want to be mentioned our campaign about habit change. And I said, well, that's perfect, because that's part of my message, you know, gradually changing people's habits over time. So that aligned nicely. I mean, you see a lot of contorted ads on Instagram, don't you, where it's just like, oh, but apart from that, all I'm doing is sort of pushing my own books that I know will help people, and also my app. But no, you don't get a prize, sadly.
Come on, Instagram, put it together. Send Graham something nice, a gold disc.
I'd like that.
So when you were a PT, what qualifications did you do? What did you have to study? What was it called?
There are two different levels. Level two, whereby you become a fitness instructor, and I think you can work in a gym. And level three is for personal training, so you can work one-to-one, start your own business. And to be honest, they're really expensive courses. The reason a lot of people forked out the money was because you have to have the insurance in case something obviously goes wrong when you have your business. So you need the liability insurance. And without passing one of those courses, you wouldn't have the insurance. So you'd be practicing illegally, basically. Halfway through it, you know, I kind of knew, listen, this is just a means to an end. It's such a difficult area, nutrition, with loads of different conflicting opinions, that it would just be impossible to put everything into a course, if that makes sense. The other option that I could have taken, which I haven't, is going to university and doing a degree, which by the time I got to sort of 25, 26 was personal training. Obviously, wouldn't have had time to do that. And then by the time the Instagram took off, actually doing my own research, understanding how to look at research, helps me with what I want to do to help people, which is really simple messaging to do with body composition, basic nutrition goals, and behavior change as well. For me, I just don't think a master's in nutrition would actually benefit my business.
I used to have a social media following on a different account. I used to have 42,000 followers. And I ended up giving it up and just shutting it down because I found it overwhelming when I started to get lots of messages. How do you keep that balance between your life and your social media life?
You should reactivate it. You should reactivate it right now. I think in the first year when I had no books, no app, I was just a personal trainer that was doing this in their spare time a lot of the time. I was just focusing on answering all my direct messages from people, which I would maybe get something like 20, 30 a day or something. And that built and built and built. And there was a time about 18 months ago where it just, I just couldn't do it anymore. There's not enough time. You know, sometimes I would put up a story and the amount of replies to that story would be over 100. Then I have message requests from people that have genuine questions, and it's just really difficult to sort of answer them. And now I kind of reply and say, this isn't me being sort of cheeky, but if you buy book one or book three or book two or whichever one, this will have the answers for you there. I know you'll be paying for that, but there's no way I can give you an answer that's worth its salt on Instagram in, you know, I don't know, a couple of paragraphs to your question. So I totally agree with you. It's just really unsustainable. Over the last 18 months, I've kind of found peace with the fact that I don't have to kind of answer them all. But occasionally I'll go in when I've got a spare hour and try and answer maybe 15 or 20 or something. But I do feel bad because sometimes people send me a message and they've actually sent one like a year or so before, and it was a really emotional sort of message. And I just, in my mind, I've ignored it. But yeah.
No, I think you mustn't feel bad. At the end of the day, you're an expert in your field and you're going to get sought out, and you can't be all things to all people. But it's important for listeners to hear this, because I think there's a lot of students and graduates listening who imagine social media is all glamour and all standing around and posing. And actually, I think that's one kind of influencer.
Yeah. So going back to your question, what did you do when I had a million followers? I was just sitting at my dining room table. Like, I might have even been in a t-shirt and boxer or something. I think I was finishing off parts of book three. It wasn't glamorous. There was paper all over the place. A couple of like dirty dishes on the place. I hadn't been cleaned for like a day. I mean, what even is an influencer these days? I've got no idea. In my mind, I'm just like a coach that helps people. I'm not necessarily someone who influences others. But that is sadly what a lot of young people want to grow up to be these days. you know, what that could bring for some people is income, I suppose, you know, doing brand deals and things like that. But I mean, how much money are you actually going to make from that?
I think a lot of attraction is the so-called freebies that they get sent, holidays, trips abroad, products.
Yeah.
And what kind of stuff do you get set? Probably a load of Nutella through the post for you.
I think I got offered some free trainers last week. I never replied because I know in my mind I would feel bad if I didn't mention them on the story. So I would just be like, no, because I don't need them and I wouldn't recommend them. And that sounds a little bit kind of blunt, but...
No, I think it's great. You have such integrity. I'd take the trainers and run off into the sunset with them.
Yeah, to be honest, to caveat that, if the trainers were decent, they'd probably do it.
Why not? Some of your videos really make me laugh. There's an element of comedy, but there's also this investigative journalism aspect we've discussed where you might go into a big shop, a high street shop, and you might debunk some of the stuff they're selling. Does that ever get controversial? Do you ever have to turn to lawyers to make sure you're saying the right thing?
God, well, fortunately, it hasn't come to that yet. But yes, there was an instance last year where I was going into Britain's leading health and well-being store. And obviously in there, we've got a bunch of sort of nutritious foods and such like, lots of supplements, which could be beneficial for a lot of people. But then, unfortunately, they've got a large section of things like appetite suppressants and metabolism boosters, which is just, what is that? Carb blocker. What is this rubbish? And so, yeah, I went in there and thought, you know what? I'm just going to do a video. Fortunately, they couldn't recognize me because I had a mask on. But then I put the video up on TikTok. And it got quite a lot of views, maybe 150,000 in a couple of days. So I went back in a few days later, and then I got kind of approached by the manager. She said, are you that person that did that video on TikTok? I'm not a very confrontational person. I'm probably a bit of a coward, actually. But within like 15 seconds, I was shouting at the manager. I don't know what came over me. But yeah, I was going on about the mental well-being of people who are suffering really serious issues. There's evidence, which I speak about in my book, you know, people suffering with eating disorders, and people are more likely to develop an eating disorder if they partake in things like appetite suppressants that are sold in these sort of shiny boxes and endorsed by influencers online. And I was just saying, do you understand the ramifications of selling this stuff? And obviously they didn't. And they thought I was just some crazy person ranting because they're just a manager of a franchise of a health shop. I think their bosses had given them a row for letting me do it in the first place. So it wasn't really their fault. Yeah.
No, I really admire your integrity. And I think it's amazing the way you found a way to engage with people that actually several government anti-obesity schemes and government advice has failed to do. Has anyone from Parliament ever approached you to get involved with policy making, or is it something you'd like to do?
No one's approached me. And yeah, absolutely. Because these people probably just don't have any concept of what it's like for people, you know, people struggling. The one aspect of it is not understanding how to, for example, lose weight or improve their health. I've never heard the government say, to lose weight, you need to consume fewer calories than you expend. All that you hear them say is, get fit, join Slimming World, or this kind of thing. The other aspect of it is, of course, social economics. And I don't think they really understand how difficult it is for low-income households and low-income individuals to access high quality foods, for example. So yeah, there's a lot of different facets to it that the government are falling short with currently. I'd love them to speak to me, obviously, but they would probably look at me and say, well, he's not a dietitian, or he's not registered nutritionist, or he's not a doctor. So no.
Well, let's hope someone influential is listening and has the common sense to ask some advice from you, because you are speaking to people in a way they understand, and that's half the battle. Let's talk about our listeners. For any students or graduates listening who want to perhaps follow a similar career path to you, maybe go into personal training, maybe go into nutrition or set up their own business, what's the best advice you can give them?
Ultimately, it's very difficult, and it's quite a saturated industry, the fitness industry. So it's paramount that you identify who you are and what you're offering people. And you have to be really consistent in getting that message out there. It took me 4 years before I kind of started making inroads. And I think that's from a promoting point of view. I think in terms of further education, if you're somebody who's kind of at university or finished university and you're kind of at a crossroads, I definitely think using social media is an advantage, because it's a tool that you can use to build a brand like myself. But I think the key is definitely being consistent. I think so many people probably try and copy myself or a few others in the industry with their kind of style of content. And at the end of the day, they might get up to a certain point, but then it's quite evident what they're doing. And you have to be your own person. I would just say, find something that works and be consistent with it and keep going with it. And it is a lot of work, but it's also identifying what works and what doesn't work and learning from it. You know, I've done a few posts that went terribly, but then I kind of understood why they went terribly. Maybe the messaging was unclear or it just looked very visually poor. And so I would look at it and go, maybe that was why, and kind of learn from it.
No, it's really good to hear you admit that sometimes things didn't go as well as they seem to be going now. One of your most controversial or famous or infamous posts, depending on how you look at it, was two pieces of toast next to each other. On one side of the screen, you have Nutella on toast, and on the other side of the screen, you have avocado on toast. You got a backlash for this post. How do you deal with criticism?
Yeah, I get a lot of criticism. To be honest, when it first started, didn't deal with it very well. I would go right back at someone in the comments, which is just pointless. The people that are criticizing the posts, unfortunately, are just misinformed, or they don't understand what I'm saying, or they haven't read the caption. What you actually find is 90 to 95% of the people who comment maybe don't necessarily even believe what they're saying. They just want to comment something negative on someone else's thing. So even if you go back with something really polite, starting a discussion with them, they'll still come back with something kind of hate-filled. It's a lot worse for other people than it is for me, because for other people, their content is themselves or putting their body or their face in their content. And for people to send them DMs or comment really nasty things would be quite hurtful. There's a couple of reels that I did calling out a biohacker in the USA, and all his followers came onto the reel and without even reading the caption or anything, were just attacking like my appearance. They're like, look at your eyes, you know, you're really unhealthy. Why, blah, 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 all this. Look at your skin. And to be honest, looking at the video, yeah, I probably look a bit tired. I'd just woken up, done the video. We'd been in lockdown for 3 months. There's not much sunlight up here in Aberdeen. So yeah, probably didn't look great. Looked all right though. Looks probably like I do now. But people go on there immediately and without even looking at the content, they just go for someone and try and make them feel bad or try and attack them. It's unfortunately everywhere on social media now.
I hate to hear this. Can everyone out there just be nice to each other, please? Anyway, besides, you're having the last laugh because you've got your book out and you're doing so well. What is the future for The Fitness Chef? Where are you going with all this?
The future for the first little bit of this year is actually resting a little bit in the sense of COVID restrictions, allowing going abroad to a few different places, relaxing a little bit, obviously keeping up the content on social media. But for this next year, promoting this third book, and also I do have an app. We're always every day looking to improve it. And with apps and things like that, the technical things are the most difficult, not the actual content of it. So that's been the most challenging thing so far. So we're just looking to improve that all the time.
Thank you for putting the joy back into eating. I've certainly learned to stop being so silly about clean eating and just enjoy what I fancy eating that day. Great luck with this new book. It's been lovely to chat to you. And I look forward to the Annie Lennox statue being accompanied by the Graham Tomlinson statue in Aberdeen.
That would be amazing.
It's me again. So that was The Fitness Chef, such a lovely chap who just goes to prove that not all influencers spend their days taking selfies. I hope you loved hearing Graham's honest opinions just as much as I did. Now for the all-important information I promised you at the start. With social media, start by finding a subject you are passionate and knowledgeable about, however niche. Then find a consistent way to present that information. Post daily, be patient. It can take years to pick up substantial followers. If you want longevity, never compromise your beliefs, even when brands start to offer you money. Treat it like a side hustle until you're well-placed to call it a full-time job, not the other way around. Then once you've hit upon your formula, stick with it relentlessly and don't get swayed by comparing yourself to others. Meanwhile, for anyone interested in starting off as a personal trainer like Graham did, there are many courses around and the starting salary is about 20 grand, going up to £100,000 a year for someone with private clients. Thank you so much to Graham. His fantastic new book, Lose Weight Without Losing Your Mind, is bright yellow, hard to miss on the shelves and out now. There's a link at the description of this podcast. And thank you for listening. Until next time. goodbye.